Coming up in the next hour on Morning Ireland, the fatal crash after a Garda chase, which is now being investigated by the Garda Ombudsman. Also, the latest on the Carndonagh murders and the investigation there. Pat Leahy of the Sunday Business Post on the impact of the government's water problems and the Maria Cahill problem for Sinn Féin, both still ongoing. And a festival for Bram Stoker, the man who made Dracula a star, and other weekend events. That's in the next 60 minutes.
Good morning, it's 8 o'clock on Friday, October 24th. This is Morning Ireland with Cathal McCullia and Audrey Carvel.
The news headlines: an American doctor who treated Ebola patients in West Africa has tested positive for the virus in New York. The Garda Ombudsman Commission is investigating a crash in County Kildare in which one person was killed and several others injured. And a 42-year-old man is still being questioned by Gardaí investigating the deaths of a couple in their 70s in County Donegal. The news in full from Clodagh Walsh.
An American doctor in New York who recently returned from Guinea has tested positive for Ebola. 33-year-old Craig Spencer had been working for Doctors Without Borders treating Ebola patients. He is currently in an isolation unit in the Bellevue Hospital in New York. Our Washington correspondent Katrina Perry reports.
Dr. Craig Spencer left Guinea on the 14th of October and travelling back through a European airport understood to be Brussels, he landed at JFK Airport in New York 3 days later. Aware of the risks, Dr. Spencer was taking his temperature twice daily. Earlier this week, he began feeling fatigued, and yesterday morning he recorded a fever, and suffering from gastrointestinal symptoms, he contacted Doctors Without Borders. They in turn contacted the New York City Health Department, and he was removed from his apartment by ambulance to the Bellevue Hospital. Health officials said Dr. Spencer had ridden on subway trains, gone on a run, met friends, taken an Uber taxi car, and gone bowling before experiencing any symptoms. Four people he was in close contact with are now being monitored: his fiancée, two friends, and the car driver. His apartment in Harlem has been sealed off, and the bowling alley in Williamsburg has been closed as a precautionary measure. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo said the city had been preparing for an Ebola outbreak for some time, and he was confident the situation was under control. Katrina Perry, RTE News.
The West African country of Mali has confirmed its first Ebola case, a 2-year-old girl recently returned from Guinea. Mali is now the 6th West African country to be affected by the outbreak. However, Senegal and Nigeria have since been declared Ebola-free by the World Health Organization. Eamon Meehan, the executive director of Trokora, is in Freetown in Sierra Leone. On this programme, he said the fight against Ebola there is still being lost.
Here in Sierra Leone, there are about 3,500 cases with about 1,500 deaths so far. It's estimated that if it isn't gotten under control within the next 6 weeks, that by December there could be a total of almost 3,000 cases a week here in Sierra Leone. And if that were to happen at that stage, it would be, I think, impossible here in this country to bring it under control.
The Garda Ombudsman Commission is investigating a crash in County Kildare in which one person was killed and several others injured. It happened on the M7 motorway when two vehicles were in collision, one of which was being pursued by Gardaí at the time. James Healy reports.
The collision happened shortly before 9 o'clock last night, just north of exit 13 near Kildare. One woman was killed in the crash. Five other people were injured and taken to Naas and Tallaght hospitals. The full extent of their injuries is unclear. In a statement, the Garda Síochána Ombudsman Commission confirmed that a collision occurred between two civilian vehicles, one of which was being pursued by Gardaí. The Commission said a team of GSOC investigators was deployed to the scene following a referral of the incident to the Garda Ombudsman. GSOC is also appealing for witnesses or anyone with information that may assist the investigation to contact them.
A 42-year-old man is still being questioned by Gardaí investigating the deaths of Jimmy and Kathleen Cudahy in County Donegal. The couple were found dead at their home in Carndonagh, County Donegal, yesterday morning. The man arrested is being held at Buncrana Garda Station. Chief executives of Irish banks have been told whether or not their institutions have passed stress tests run by the European Central Bank. Sources say permanent TSB has failed one of three stress tests. Our business editor, David Murphy.
Mortgage arrears and a large number of tracker loans have weakened permanent TSB's finances. Sources say it will fail one of three bank stress tests, while AIB and Bank of Ireland will pass. The process examines whether banks have enough funds to withstand a severe economic downturn. It's expected permanent TSB will have to raise hundreds of millions of euro to make up the shortfall. To do so, it will sell shares on the stock market. That will see the state's 99% stake in the bank reduced. Full details of the stress tests will be released on Sunday morning.
EU leaders meeting overnight in Brussels have agreed to cut greenhouse gas emissions by 40% by the year 2030, compared with 1990 levels. However, they delayed taking a decision on just how much each member state will be obliged to reduce their emissions to achieve that goal until after a major UN climate change conference next year. The Irish government asserts it's made considerable progress in ensuring a special provision has been made for agriculture and forestry in the final text. Police in Canada say they believe the man accused of shooting dead a Canadian soldier and attacking the country's parliament building on Wednesday acted alone. The suspect has been identified as 32-year-old Michael Zihaf Bibo, a Canadian citizen who may have had dual citizenship with Libya and was believed to be making his way to Syria. Canadian police have also released a video which shows the suspect arriving at Parliament buildings and getting out of a car with a rifle over his shoulder. And now the time is just 7 minutes past eight.
The shocking deaths of a couple in Donegal and of a young woman in Kildare. Those two stories make a lot of the front pages today. The Irish Independent, Irish Daily Mail, Irish Daily Mirror and Irish Sun all lead with that discovery in Donegal of what the strap across the top of the Sun terms a bloodbath horror. Another horror, meanwhile, makes the lead in the Herald, a report on the car which was being chased by Gardaí while being driven by youth suspected of involvement in house burglaries. The paper leads with the dreadful result. Woman dies in burglary gang pile-up, says the headline. An innocent woman was killed after her car was smashed into by a vehicle being pursued by Gardaí in a high-speed chase. It happened, we're told, between Kildare Town and Newbridge at 9:15 last night. What's happening in the case of Positive Action, meanwhile, makes the lead story in the Irish Times today. Prosecution likely over spending of support group funds is the headline. A Garda investigation into spending at the support group, we're told, is expected to recommend that a woman be charged with criminal offences. In The Independent, meanwhile, Colette Brown considers the mixed emotions she believes the case raises. Under the headline, Positive Action has questions to answer, but the greatest tragedy is its closure, she says. The litany of profligate spending is damning, yet in a way it feels kind of grubby to be poring over the details of the expense claims made by members of Positive Action. Perhaps, she says, if the Department of Health had sought to oversee its budget at an earlier stage, then none of the bad practices that have come to light this week would have developed. What's developing in Sinn Féin in the week of Maria Cahill's revelations continues to get space, though not on front pages. In the opinion page in the Irish Examiner, Alison O'Connor expresses the view about the party leader that Adams must be held to account, just like any other politician. And she says of his followers, naming in particular Mary Lou MacDonald and Pierce Doherty, they should worry that their never-ending discretion, the manner in which they always err so utterly on the side of the party line, at a time when they're in no danger of losing their lives for their political beliefs, will ultimately serve to damage their credibility. The Times and Independent pieces on yesterday's events in the Dáil Chamber, meanwhile, both highlight the absence of MacDonald. Mary Lou conspicuous by her absence, says the headline in the Times. Where is Mary Lou is what Lise Hand in the Independent says with being asked, while another piece on it all in the Independent is headed, Authority of Adams in Sinn Féin questioned for first time. Niall O'Connor says, the public outrage over the treatment of Ms Cahill and the blatant attempts by the party leadership to discredit her story have unsettled Sinn Féin politicians at all levels. The Examiner leads this morning with a study compiled over 3 years on the drugs trade. Policing has little impact on drugs market is the headline, and Cormac O'Keefe follows up his story on that finding and others with an analysis piece inside, making the point that the findings are a bitter pill to swallow in the war against the drug trade. The Examiner also finds front page space for a picture and report on the interim settlement yesterday in the case of 13-year-old James McCarthy, whose parents were awarded €2.75 million for his care over the next 3 years. The headline is a quote from James's mother, "Why did they have to fight us all the way?" Otherwise, this morning, The Times finds front page space for the case it fought but lost in Europe yesterday over a decision to make the paper pay the costs of its successful legal battle with the Mahon Tribunal. And the paper also carries an interview with the new Minister for Transport, Tourism and Sport. "I absolutely love this job," Pascal Donoghue told Tim O'Brien. But finally this morning in features, The Times has a piece on the clocks going back on Sunday. "Is it actually time though for them to go forward?" asks Dara Murphy. The Examiner has one on the 75th anniversary of nylons, and The Independent has one on the attraction of the rockabilly look. "The look though," emphasises one fan. "Not the hair, not the decor, not the car, not even the frilly pinny means that a husband, we're told, can expect to come home now to find a 1950s wife waiting with slippers and a tumbler of whiskey."
Caroline Murphy, thank you very much. 13 minutes past 8. You're listening to Morning Ireland at 15 minutes past 8. Our crime correspondent Paul Reynolds joined us now to tell us about this fatal crash on the M7 motorway near Kildare last night. The Garda Ombudsman Commission is investigating. Paul, what happened?
This happened at around 8:45 last night, Cahal, on the M7, which is the main Dublin-Cork, Dublin-Limerick road, just past Junction 13, which is the Kildare exit, travelling northbound towards Dublin. The Gardaí first got a call when a car which was travelling back towards Dublin with five males in it had broke through the toll bridge without paying just before Port Leash, just south of Port Leash from Dublin. Now, this car had five males in it, teens and in their early 20s, and one of the occupants of the car was a 13-year-old boy. Now, a number of Garda cars picked up on that car. They followed that car. I think there could have been up to three Garda cars involved, two of them unmarked and one patrol car, and they were following the car, trying to stop the car. The sirens were going. They were trying to alert the car to pull over. Now, the five in the car must have been aware that the Garda wanted them to stop because of the blue lights and because of the sirens and all that. But they kept driving at speed towards Dublin. Now, at the Kildare junction, there was a woman in her car, in her car, a Citroen car, on her own. Now, she came from the Kildare junction, from Kildare, drove down onto the motorway. She went into one of the lanes, and the car with the gang in it hit her from the side in a high-speed collision, killing the woman. She was 34 years of age, she was from Kildare, and she was pronounced dead at the scene.
Do you know, Paul, was there any Garda car stationary at that point, or was it just purely a chase that was ongoing and that ended so tragically?
No, GSOC tell us this morning they're still trying to establish the details of what exactly happened. I know there have been a number of reports that the Garda were trying to box this car in and stop this car that way. GSOC were unable to give us any details in relation to that. But the Garda did receive reports of a number of burglaries in County Tipperary. And they are investigating if the five people, including the 13-year-old boy in that car, are linked to those burglaries. Now, they suspect that the five were acting as a travelling criminal gang. Now, the five, including the boy, are in hospital this morning. There's two hospitals, Naas and Talla. Their injuries are serious but not thought to be life threatening at this stage, but obviously that's being monitored. Two Gardaí, so in total seven people, were taken to hospital, but in relation to the Gardaí, they were treated for minor injuries and shock and released overnight.
So, from what you're saying, all or most of the injured are these young males from this car that the Garda were chasing, right?
Yeah, the five of them were in one car. They were all taken to hospital and they all remain in hospital. So they're the people with the more severe injuries, and they're still in hospital this morning. And because the Garda were involved in pursuing this group of people, the five people, the investigation was referred to GSOC, the independent investigators. Now, GSOC issued a statement in the early hours this morning just saying basically that a team of their investigators were deployed to the scene following referral from the Garda. They're calling it a serious road traffic incident on the M7. They're saying that road closures are expected to be in place for several hours. Now, we know that the road between Kildare, the junction at Kildare and Newbridge, junctions 13 and 12, remain closed this morning as this investigation continues. And they've issued a general appeal for witnesses or anyone with information to contact them on 1890 600 800.
Well, it sounds like a very, very sad case in many ways, because this this woman really just turned out to be in the wrong place at the wrong time.
It's true. I mean, she, a 34-year-old woman from Kildare, in her car, just simply drove onto the motorway and was hit at high speed by this car with the five young people in it, teenagers, one of them 13 years of age, and some of them in their early 20s.
Paul, thank you very much.
To the United States next, where within the past few hours, a 33-year-old doctor has tested positive for the Ebola virus in New York. Our Washington correspondent Katrina Perry told me more.
The doctor is 33-year-old Craig Spencer, and he found out he had Ebola just a matter of hours ago. His test results came back as positive. There are pictures circulating of this young man, taken from his Facebook page mostly. Very clean-cut guy, bright-eyed, young American doctor, living in Harlem in New York in an apartment with his fiancée. Harlem has transformed into a trendy, kind of hipster type of area. He went to Guinea with Doctors Without Borders or Médecins Sans Frontières about a month ago. He was working in Guinea, treating Ebola patients there. He left, or he finished up his work there on the 12th of October, so Sunday week ago, and he left Guinea 2 days later. He flew back to the U.S. via Europe, going through Brussels, where he stopped off for an undetermined amount of time, but he arrived back in the U.S. this day last week, the 17th of October. Now, we were told by officials who gave a press conference last night that he had no symptoms on the journey back on any of those aircraft. He had no symptoms upon arrival in the U.S. He felt fine. He actually, at one point, told doctors he went for a 3-mile run, so he can't have been feeling too bad. But things took a bit of a turn at the beginning of this week. So after he'd been back in the U.S. for just a couple of days, he began feeling fatigued on Monday, Tuesday, and we're told that he was aware of his potential exposure because obviously he'd been treating Ebola patients, so he had been self-monitoring himself. Now, that is different to self-quarantining himself, so he was still very much out and about, but he was taking his temperature twice daily to notice if there were any changes in that. And then yesterday morning, he noticed that he was running a fever and he was having gastrointestinal difficulties. And no blood loss or diarrhea, but he did contact Doctors Without Borders in the first instance to report his symptoms. They then contacted the New York City Health Department to report it, and the Health Department then contacted the emergency medical team. And within a very short amount of time, Dr. Spencer was transported by a special hazardous ambulance with all the various protocols in place. All the medical personnel were wearing protective gear, we're told. And he was taken then to a special unit in the Bellevue Hospital in New York.
And as you say, Katrina, he'd been doing pretty much regular things since he came back from Guinea, but very well aware of the potential that he had being a doctor and being exposed to the virus. But are people now trying to make contact with people who he was in contact with, because he was on the subway, he was out and about doing pretty much normal things?
Yes, they were referred to last night as disease detectives, in fact, and they're a team of people who are trying to essentially track down Craig Spencer's movements over the last week and who he came in contact with. As I said, he went on a 3-mile run around the neighbourhood at one point. He also rode various subways on three different lines. He met friends for dinner. He obviously saw his fiancée. They live together. He went bowling as well on Wednesday night in Williamsburg in Brooklyn, another kind of trendy hipster area. And these disease detectives are basically trying to trace what happened. He also took a journey in an Uber taxi cab. But officials are saying at this stage, really, they consider him to have only had close contact with four individuals: his fiance, those two friends, and this taxi driver. The taxi driver is not considered to be at risk because of the nature of the contact they had. But the fiancé and the two friends are. So the fiancé is currently quarantined at the hospital and the two friends are quarantined. They're being monitored at home. But there was very much a move last night from the mayor of New York, Bill de Blasio, and the governor, Andrew Cuomo, to reassure people that, obviously New York City, very densely populated area, a lot of people coming and going, using the subway, that there was no cause for alarm. They said at the press conference that Ebola, although it was described as a scary disease last night, that it is very difficult to contract, but nevertheless all the precautions were in place and The governor and the mayor both said they had full confidence in the systems and in the medical professionals that there wouldn't be any sort of outbreak, and they were confident that the situation could be handled.
And to make the point again, people do not become infectious until their symptoms show. And presumably the authorities want to maintain calm. And they're also very keen to point out that New York has been preparing and is well prepared to deal with an outbreak of Ebola.
Absolutely. And it's almost polar opposite to the situation that we saw in Dallas. New York is extremely prepared. We're told 8 hospitals, including Bellevue, the hospital where Craig Spencer is currently, 8 hospitals in New York State have been identified as basically specialized units. They have isolation units, isolated labs, etc. The personnel there have been trained, so they know exactly what they're doing in terms of treating an Ebola patient long term. Officials were also at pains to point out that there are 200 hospitals in New York State, and they're all trained in terms of what to do if someone with Ebola presents themselves, but that the protocols in place are that people will be transferred to one of these 8 hospitals, which is why Craig Spencer was transferred to the Bellevue Hospital, even though he himself works at another hospital in New York, the Columbia University New York Presbyterian Hospital, but that hospital said he hadn't been back at work since he returned from Guinea, so there's no issue of any contact with patients there.
Our Washington correspondent Katrina Perry there talking to me a little earlier about that case in New York, a 33-year-old doctor testing positive for the Ebola virus. It's been quite a political week for both the government and Sinn Féin. Public anger over water charges is at boiling point, and Sinn Féin came under significant pressure following allegations from Belfast woman Maria Cahill that she was raped by a senior IRA man and then subjected to months of interrogation by an IRA investigating unit. She accused the party of covering up child abuse, an accusation they deny. So where now from here? With me is Pat Leahy, political editor of the Sunday Business Post. Pat, it has been quite a week. We'll start with the government and water charges. The talk now is that Endacenny is considering freezing the flat rate for another 2 years. Will that take any sting out of the anger that's out there?
That's certainly the intention. I think we'll see a package of measures brought forward in the next week or two by government. I understand some senior officials are to report to the Economic Management Council, the sort of inner cabinet of the Taoiseach and Taoiseach and two finance ministers. I think that's due to happen by next week, and they've been tasked with finding some sort of a political resolution for the water charges controversy, which is, you know, spooking TDs and ministers like almost nothing else over the lifetime of this government. And just at the point where they can do a giveaway budget, albeit a modest giveaway budget by the standards of years ago, and when they believe they should be seeing some sort of a political dividend from an improving economy, they've been instead pitched into political crisis on the sole issue of the water charges. So the big priority for government is to get over this hump. And I'm told some of the elements that they'll be considering are a capping of the charge beyond next summer, a flat rate extending, a flat rate for consumers which may extend beyond the next general election, and the setting of a point at which beyond which nobody will have to pay. Now that may, I suppose, violate many of the principles of charging for usage that the government introduced as part of the water charges policy, but they feel that something of that order, with a number of other improvements, may get them over the hump.
I want to move on to Sinn Féin, and your paper has a poll coming out at the weekend. We don't know anything about that yet, but was it an extraordinary week in the Dáil for them, for Gerry Adams, for Mary Lou MacDonald?
Yeah, it was. You know, sometimes the Dáil chamber itself is almost irrelevant in our politics, but it wasn't this week. And anyone who was there or will have watched on the news or on television the exchanges on Wednesday couldn't have mistaken the seriousness and the drama of what was unfolding. I have never seen since Sinn Féin came into the chamber, and certainly since Gerry Adams came into the chamber as a TD, I've never seen him under such visible pressure, the you could see in the faces. And while it's always risky reading into, you know, the facial expressions and body language of people in the chamber, I thought it was unmistakable, and the tension in the chamber was almost palpable as Gerry Adams was questioned by the Taoiseach and by the leader of Fianna Fáil on the Maria Cahill issue. I think the issue is not going away. I think it is different from the case earlier this year, the McConville case, where Gerry Adams was arrested, and obviously had questions to answer about that, including in the chamber. But I thought it was qualitatively different to that, and we will see, I think, this weekend whether there is immediate political damage to Sinn Féin. But certainly the expectation within the party, I think, and certainly from people outside the party, is that this presents a political challenge, an unprecedented political challenge to Gerry Adams personally and to Sinn Féin.
All right, Pat, thanks very much for coming in. Pat Leahy, political editor of the Sunday Business Post.
24 minutes to 9. Des Callaghan's back with the sport. Last match of the League of Ireland. They couldn't plan it better, could they?
No, they couldn't. It's perfect. Although I saw Emmett Malone made the point in the Irish Times. He wondered, do they pre-arrange the fixture so that the last game is dramatic? And he said, but if that's the case, were they thinking it would be Sligo Rovers versus St. Pat's tonight? It's also a fixture, but of course it's not. The game that will decide the league title is Dundalk hosting Cork City at a packed Oriel Park tonight. And Cork have a 1-point lead going into the game, so a draw will be enough for Cork City. Dundalk must win. Now the game kicks off at 7:45. It's live on RTE2. And to look ahead to it, we're joined now by the Bray Wanderers manager Alan Matthews for a neutral view. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Des. How are you?
Good, thank you. Good. Well, is that a difficult mindset? I mean, at least Dundalk know they have to win. Cork, will they be tempted to hold out for a draw?
I think Cork will be very confident going up there. Albeit they've been beaten up there twice this season already. They don't have to win the game. The way they're set up is more or less to be secure and tight and not really go and be exposed. Dundalk know exactly what they have to do, and it's very clear they need to be on the front foot from the off. So I think it'll be set up two different types of teams, two different trends of football, but I just think Cork might have enough to hang in, and I think it might end up being a draw, which will suit Cork, obviously.
And do you think it'll be a tight, scoreless draw, low-scoring draw?
I think Dundalk will have to score a couple of goals to win. Albeit, as I said, Cork are renowned for being, you know, strong and defensively well organised. They have got a bit of pace in Dennehy. They're good from set pieces, so I think they can score a goal. From a Dundalk point of view, they will be on the front foot. If they get a goal early, it'll give them momentum and could well push them on. But I just think Cork have that bit of experience. They've fought and scrapped their way right to the summit, if you like, at this stage of the season. And they won't be nervous. This is a bonus for them. From a Dundalk point of view, they've been more or less there or thereabouts all season, and it's a great season for them, but it would be a sense of, you know, really anti-climax and underachievement if they don't fulfil that tonight and get the win that gets them across the line. So different mindsets in both sets of camps, and knowing some of the lads as I do from the Cork camp, the experience they have and just that know-how, I think they may just have enough to do whatever it takes to get the point to get them across the line.
Okay, it'll be intriguing stuff. Alan Matthews, thank you very much. That game is live on RT2, and of course Alan will be involved at the other end of the table. Bray are safe, but UCD and Athlone Town are trying to avoid the automatic relegation spot. UCD are a point ahead of Athlone. UCD are at home to Drogheda, while Bray go to Athlone. The other games tonight in the Premier Division: Bowes versus Derry, St Pat's versus Sligo, and Shamrock Rovers versus Limerick. In the First Division promotion playoff, Galway take a 2-0 lead to Talca Park, where they face Shelburne in the second leg. In last night's Europa League action, Glasgow Celtic went top of Group D on goal difference. They struggled, but they got a 2-1 victory over the Romanian side Astra. Everton are top of Group H after drawing nil-all with Lille in France, and Spurs were 5-1 winners over the Greek side Asteras. Now, the European Cup rugby, huge night at Thomond Park tonight. Munster taking on Saracens. Munster, of course, boosted by that dramatic late win over Sale last weekend, but they take on a very strong Saracens side who beat Claremont at the weekend. So to look ahead to the weekend action, we're joined by Shane Horgan. Morning, Shane.
Hi, Des.
Munster, well, they'll have to improve, certainly on their first half performance last week, won't they?
Yeah, they will have to improve. It was disappointing in the first half, but they really got together in the second half and looked like the old Munster that we'd seen in years gone by. But it's the nature of this competition is that with every round, the pressure is ramping up and ramping up. And if you look at the remaining fixtures in that pool, it's very unlikely that the likes of Clermont and Saracens are going to lose any of their home games. So this, already in the second round, is a must-win game for Munster. They have to beat Saracens, who are a very strong outfit. They had a great win against Clermont last week. Strong forward pack, but with Ashton and Strattle on the wings looking very sharp, it'll be very difficult for Munster to win in Thomond, a place that traditionally they've been very strong in, but over the last couple of months has maybe lost a little bit of its lustre.
And if Munster are to win it, is it up front they'll win it?
I think it is. If you look at the forward pack that they've picked, they've brought in Cronin, who was really the revelation of the Munster pack last year. They brought back Boha as well, another strong scrummager, but those two guys can carry the ball around the field as well. They're very active at the breakdown. If you, the back row for Munster, it's very strong with O'Mahony, Stander and O'Donnell, all big men who can carry the ball very well and also mobile. I think we're going to see a traditional Munster performance and trying to bully Saracens up front.
Okay, now tomorrow Ulster host Toulon. And are Ulster in trouble after that defeat to Leicester last weekend?
Well, I suppose we'll know a lot more after Saturday afternoon. This looks like the tide of the round for me. Ravenhill is going to be absolutely, they're going to be hanging from the rafters. Toulon, European champions coming over. Not a massively impressive performance last week against the Scarlets, but they still got over the line. Again, another... This competition is crazy that you need to win your home games, and Ulster will expect to do that against Toulon.
And do you expect that? You do?
I do, actually, yeah. I was surprised that Ulster didn't beat Leicester last week. I had them tipped. I thought they prepared very well. They looked good in the Pro 12. They got off to a slow start, something that they can't afford to do against Toulon. If you give Toulon 10 points, I don't think Ulster will see them get back into the game in the second half. So I think with the home support behind them, with the shock of maybe not getting the performance or the win last week, I think Ulster will have enough in the bank to beat Toulon. And if they do, it'll be a phenomenal victory. If they don't, they might be out of Europe.
Yeah. Leinster go to Cast on Sunday. That's a tricky one.
It is. It depends what sort of cast teams show up. Now, traditionally, French sides don't like to lose at home. Castra have a good record at home. They lost 25-9 last week, though, to Harlequins away. That really means for them, if they lose this game, they're out of Europe. This has got a huge effect on the rest of this group for Leinster. If Leinster beat Castra, they may knock them out effectively of the group. It means it'll be a runoff between them and Harlequins, really, for the two spots that might get out of that group. Huge pressure again on Leinster, but I think if they get a good start, they get into the Castra team, maybe their minds will waver and they'll start thinking about the French League and not the European Championship.
And finally, Shane, a word about Connacht to go to Exeter in the Challenge Cup.
Yeah, it's an interesting tie for Connacht. Exeter are a very similar team to Connacht in many ways. They're stronger than the sum of their parts, and they have a very strong home record. Very difficult place to go for Connacht. I'd be surprised if they can get a win there.
Okay, Shane Horgan, thanks a million for joining us. In golf, Damian McGrain is 4 under par in the Perth International. Torbjørn Olesen of Denmark leads on 11 under. Kevin Phelan, 3 under after 17 holes. Gareth Maben finished on level par. Peter Laurie, 5 over. In Gaelic games, ahead of the All-Stars presentation tonight, Eamon O'Shea has confirmed he's staying on as Tipperary hurling manager. And Kilmacud Crokes take on St. Jude's in the Dublin hurling final at Parnell Park. And finally in racing, the Racing Post reporting that Giggenstown Stud, owned by Michael Leary, has removed their 3 horses from the yard of racehorse trainer Philip Fenton, who was found guilty of having performance-enhancing drugs and other animal remedies at his stables. The racing action this evening is in Dundalk.
And a 42-year-old man is still being questioned by Gardaí and Buncrana in County Donegal. This is after the deaths of Jimmy and Kathleen Cuddy, an elderly couple, in Carndonagh yesterday. We'll be talking to our Northwest correspondent Eileen Magner about this in a moment, but first of all we're joined by Rena Donaghy, who's a teacher and local councillor. Rena Donaghy, thanks for taking the call and good morning.
Good morning.
The fact that Mr. Cuddihy was a retired teacher and Kathleen a nurse, any two deaths like this would be dreadful, but the effect of presumably such well-known people and their passing in such tragic circumstances.
Absolutely. there's a dark cloud over Clarendonna and the Inishowen Peninsula. The people are numbed and saddened at the devastation and the shocking revelations of yesterday morning. It's a tragedy of immense proportions. Yeah, there's great disbelief that such a lovely, outgoing, neighbourly and hard-working couple could die so tragically in such a violent attack in their own home.
And these were people who, not just because of their jobs, I gather, played a fairly significant role in their community.
Oh, absolutely. The couple had a great love for golf. I believe Jimmy was the captain of Ballyliffin Golf Club not so long ago. They were very well known in many circles. Kathleen and Jimmy did an awful lot of community work. They were very community spirited. They were always doing fundraising for many charities, including Letterkenny Hospital. Kathleen had been a nurse and an ambulance driver. And as you have rightly said, Jimmy was a teacher, and of course he'd be very well known in those circles. Jimmy was from Kilkenny himself. He taught maths and he taught metalwork. He came to Clarendonna many years ago. He met his wife, Kathleen. Kathleen's from Mallin. He settled in Clarendonna, where they reared their four children. And yes, they're very, very well known. And as I said, they're very well respected, very popular, very community spirited. Just always working to better the lives of others.
Rena, thank you very much for talking to us, and our sympathy to you and everyone in the local community, and particularly, obviously, the Cudahy family on their loss. And as I said, Eileen Magner is on the line, our Northwest correspondent. Just bring us up to date on what a man being questioned, we know, on the state of the investigation, Eileen.
This man was arrested yesterday morning shortly after the bodies were found, so that would have been a little while after 9 o'clock this morning, and he has been held under Section 4 of the Criminal Justice Act in Buncrana Garda Station. Now, under that act he can be held for 24 hours, but the time would have been suspended to allow him to rest during the night, so it could be later today before a decision is taken as to whether he will be charged or not. In the meantime, last night, Dr. Mary Cassidy, the state pathologist, arrived at the house shortly before 7 o'clock, and she carried out a preliminary examination at the scene, and then the bodies of Jimmy and Kathleen Cudahy were removed from their home to the morgue at Letterkenny General Hospital, and Dr. Cassidy will carry out postmortems on their bodies later on this morning.
And they found a hatchet. Where did they find that?
Well, they found a hatchet at the scene. They're not giving too much details about it. I suppose there's no need to say much more, really. You know, one can only imagine the horror of the scene that was there. And we understand they're not looking for anybody else in connection with this double tragedy. And decisions will be made later on today as to what direction this investigation will take by the Gardaí. Obviously, the postmortems will influence that. And there'll be other things taken into account before a decision is reached today.
Eileen Magner, thank you very much.
You're welcome back to the programme. It's Halloween next Friday, but it's the bank holiday weekend today. And in a few minutes, we'll be getting a taste of some of the events happening all over the country this weekend from Cian McCormack. But first, let's hear how Dublin will come under the spell of vampires and zombies for the Bram Stoker Festival.
Vampires and Dublin's dark side.
Thank you, Your Finest, please.
Well, if you're in a pub, you might want to just take a glance to your right or left and just check that the people around you don't have incisors, because we're going to be filling the city with vampires. They're going to be sitting up at every bar, they're going to be hopping into restaurants, they're going to be on the streets, and they're going to be attending every event that we've got going on for the festival.
There's plenty happening in the capital this weekend. It's all part of the Bram Stoker Festival, Dublin City Arts Officer Ray Yates.
This isn't just Dracula and it isn't just Bram Stoker, it's an inspiration for all kinds of supernatural happenings throughout the city. We would like to see this become Dublin's Mardi Gras. So everyone is dressing up, they're coming down to take part in the like zombie goth dance-offs.
Brains! Mates?
And luckily, they're still recruiting zombies. Joe Mangan, the festival's artistic director.
What we're looking for and what we've done is we've put a call out for dancers and people who are interested in dressing up as goths or zombies, which we're hoping a lot of people will do across the weekend anyway, as well as vampires. And we're going to have a dance-off at the top of Grafton Street on Saturday afternoon.
You'll know the dance-off is happening when you hear this song. If you miss it, there's much more going on.
Running an event called Underground Gothic, where the audience get into a train, go underneath the secret tunnel between Connolly and Houston, and get scared out of their wits.
With those tickets sold out, there's much more to do for free. On Monday, Mocknes present The Summoning, where monsters will roam Dublin streets, but there's also The Vamp Wire.
So The Vamp Wire is our title for Dublin's first ever free, publicly accessible zip wire in the city centre. So The Vamp Wire is registration online. Everything is through the website, so bramstokerfestival.com. And it's a ballot, so it's a real golden ticket opportunity. So anyone who wants to get a go on The Vamp Wire really needs to get online and register for that opportunity. There might be the possibility, if you turn up and one of our golden ticket people are generous, they might be able to let you on instead.
If you're feeling more grounded, there's free opera in Clontarf.
Der Vampire is this amazing opera that's happening out in St. Anne's Park in Clontarf. And Clontarf is the birthplace of Bram Stoker. So we were really keen this year to bring the festival out into the area in which he spent the first few years of his life.
Adele Shannon and Simon Morgan are two of the performers.
What's fantastic about it is we're going to be moving throughout the opera, and we actually end in a copse of trees, you know, and the light will just be fading, so it'll be extremely atmospheric.
That's the job of opera in the open. We try and bring opera to the people, very accessible. It's free entry. It's literally, as you said, open air onto the streets.
BramStokerFestival.com for more information on that event. And Cian is with me now. And Cian, right across the country, there's a lot on.
Oh, definitely a lot on. Hard to fit it all in. And really, you'll get a sense of Halloween in that theme with a lot of the things that are going on. An example of that would be the Virginia Pumpkin Festival. Here's the festival's spokesperson, Marion Smith.
This is, as it says, Virginia Pumpkin Festival. We have pumpkins coming from all over Ireland. We have giant pumpkins, perfect pumpkins, alternative pumpkins, and we also have pumpkin pies. Saturday we have a children's party, we have arts and crafts and food fair, a glamorous pumpkin ball, Sunday street entertainment, followed by fireworks. If people want to go to get more information on Virginia Pumpkin Festival, please visit www.pumpkinfestival.ie.
And that's the Virginia Pumpkin Festival in Roscommon. What's happening in Kilkenny, Cian?
Lots on in Kilkenny. The Rockfall Music Festival, bands will play to raise funds for Enable Ireland. There's Thrill Kenny Zombie Festival. Lots of zombies around the place. Basically what happens here is they're trying to break a global world record, a dance-off of Michael Jackson's Thriller. Basically, people are invited to turn up, dress up as zombies. They will meet at 7 o'clock at Canal Square in Kilkenny, and that's the exact time that other zombies will gather in other cities all over the world to do the very same dance. There's the Savour Food Festival, which will have food demonstrations with the likes of Kevin Dundon for charity, and a food market with 80 food producers on Saturday and Sunday turning up. And then there's the National Conquer Championships. Here's its chairperson, Brenda Cooper.
It's all happening in Kilkenny Castle Park. We've changed venue this year. Three different children's competitions, under 11, under 14 and under 17. And then there's an adult and a team competition. And you can register on the day at 12:30. Competition starts at 1 p.m.
So what exactly happens? You just bring along your conquerors and battle it out?
No, you don't. We provide all the conquerors to make it really fair. The children in Freshford School have been collecting them for the last couple of weeks. And everybody then, two people get drawn against each other and they have 5 minutes to try and break the other person's conquer. And then they proceed, it's like a league, they go through and rush their way down to the final.
How much does it cost or is it free?
It's €8 per adult, €4 per child, and you can re-enter. And if you don't like the competitive edge, you can play in the practice arena for just €3.
What do you win if you eventually become the National Conquer Champion?
Well, the Irish National Conquer Champion will have a prize of €250 with the runner-up getting a prize of €100, and the children's prize is then of €30 and €15.
Where does the money go?
The proceeds will go to Prague House in Freshford. Prague House is a home for older residents and is run by religious order.
That's Brenda Cooper there. Children, of course, off school for midterm, Cian, is there much for them to do?
Yeah, it's always kind of, you know, an important thing to do, to find something for the little ones to do. Hullabaloo, Offaly's Children's Art Festival, is on in County Offaly from Wednesday. Also, the Sploder Arts Festival is on in Nenagh in County Tipperary from Monday to Friday. Tickets for this community event are priced between €2 and €5. Here's the festival's director, Brendan Maher.
This year we're focusing on the idea of play, and we've got a bunch of workshops and events going on under that theme. We've got a Learn Robotics workshop, which will get the kids to make their own fighting sumo robot. We've got 20,000 Lego bricks ready and waiting for the kids to come along and help build a replica of Nenagh Castle. We've got shows from Banyan Theatre with their puppet shows Goldilocks and the Three Bears and The Emperor's New Clothes. We've got the Fanzini Brothers with their Cannonball Circus. And then we've got screen printing workshops, shadow puppet workshops, craft workshops. We've also got the Music Generation Bus in town for a music workshop. And then we round the whole event off with fireworks on Halloween night. And full details for all events can be had on splodder.ie. That's SPLEODAR.ie.
Finally, Audrey, just to say there are too many festivals to mention them all here, but here's a quick list. The Imagine Arts Festival continues in Waterford. The Richard Harris International Film Festival is on in Limerick. There's the Cork Jazz Festival, the Sligo Live Festival, and a more comprehensive thing to do over the weekend can be found on discoverireland.ie.
Great stuff, Cian. Thanks very much. 2 minutes to 9.